Well, after two consecutive promotions for the team, the owner of Peterborough United wrote in the first home programme back in August, it was against Sheffield Wednesday as well, of his two main choices for the future. First, to continue to recruit players between the ages of 17 and 23 who have not yet fulfilled their potential. And secondly, not to allow greed to hijack our progress, not to pay huge wages to the players. The result of these two choices has been that we've sunk like a stone to the bottom of the Championship. Jane reminded me this morning that at least we're the strongest team in the division because we're holding everybody else up. And that's affected managers, employees and fans. Choices have consequences. And so they did when I taught at BMS. I chose to be a school teacher. And when I got to teaching there, I realised that I was involved in choices that boys were making. Should I choose geography? Well, since I taught it, the answer was obviously going to be yes, of course, or don't touch it with a barge pole. But one or the other. What O-levels, that dates me, or GCSEs, or A-levels should I do? The choices there that they had to make at the age of 14, it was loaded so that the really intelligent boys were steered towards the sciences. I think they sort of like to think of themselves as scientists, you know, standing in a white coat and inventing things and earning lots of money. But anyway, you know, what A-level should I do? What university should I choose? What job should I choose? And the interesting thing was, and the slightly spooky thing was, that I realised that they actually listened sometimes to what I said in reply. And you know, there's quite a responsibility when you know that possibly your advice might affect somebody's future. These were important choices for them because doors were being closed at quite an early age, or other doors being opened if they were clever enough or interested enough to do what they wanted to. But choices for the future are not ones to make very quickly, are they? So it was with Jesus. Right after his baptism and the confirmation that he was God's chosen one, his beloved son, he faces up to the choices of how he's going to fulfill his calling. What kind of Messiah is he going to be? Very, very crucial choices. He could turn stones into bread. A good thing. He could feed the hungry, work an economic miracle. That would make him popular. He could win the people by doing something really spectacular. A stunt. That would grab everybody's attention. But of course he'd have to keep doing stunts, each surpassing the one before, to keep people interested in him. He could be political. He could set his standards a bit lower. He could drive out the Romans. Imagine the popularity that would give him among the Jews. He could, in short, by doing these not necessarily bad things, and lots of people at the time would have said these are good things to do. Max Clifford would certainly have told him to do that. He could become a superstar like Superman. He could zap the system. He would be a celebrity, the centre of adulation, a really powerful man. Updated, you can just see him in the headlines, on all the front pages and in all the TV news and current affair slots, feeding all the hungry, you know, fixing the world economy, being a spectacular, perhaps TV evangelist. Just touch the screen and you'll be healed. And being a UN supremo, globe-trotting to all the trouble spots to sort out trouble. We'd hang on his every pronouncement. He would be very, very famous. And doing lots of very good things. And these, therefore, are very seductive suggestions. We need Christians in economics working out justice and fairness. We need them in politics to clean up the act and to make politicians, to be honest politicians. We need Christians who from time to time, or groups of Christians who do big things to show that God does act. But these things are ultimately mirages, bubbles that might almost reach the sky, as the West Ham fans sing, but that they burst in the air, don't deliver, unless men's hearts are changed. And so Jesus rejects all what he sees as secondary stuff. He sees through all the temptations and chooses the way of trusting in the power of love instead of trusting in the love of power. And changing those words round makes all the difference in the world. But as we read in Philippians, he made himself nothing or of no reputation, the exact opposite of choosing to be a superstar. He humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. And therefore God exalted him to the highest place. This for Jesus was God's way, his plan. And this mind, this attitude, so St. Paul says, should be ours too. In a Good Friday hymn we sing, "My richest gain I count but loss." Well, do you? And do I? Do we even know what our richest gain is? Since none of us won the £56 million on the lottery, we don't have the choice as to what to do with that. But your richest gain and my richest gain, we count but loss because of the cross of Jesus. And further in that same hymn, we sing, "Were the whole realm of nature mine," linking back to one of Jesus' temptations, "that were an offering far too small, love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all." Yes, were the whole realm of nature mine or yours. That is quite an amazing calling to us, to have the mind of Christ in us. Well, you've all got the leaflets. I didn't know you were going to have them. But www.challenge2010.org, and I've actually got that right, which for me is remarkable, challenges us all to put the way of Christ into action in our lives and our world this Lent. We are dared to make a difference in our lives. You and I can choose this Lent to let God direct or redirect our lives as Jesus did, whatever our age and whatever our Christian experience. Jesus said, "Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that God utters." We know that these days. Materialism and consumerism have basically failed to deliver. The last 2 years, if nothing else, have shown this. And it seems to me that these words, well, they could be the basis for us this Lent as we try to live our life as Jesus did, as God meant. If you want to go beyond these words, you know, "Man shall not live by bread alone," we are invited or offered the chance by the Bishop of St. Albans to Twitter or RSS. I haven't a clue what RSS in capital letters means. Or tweet, I presume. Or he'll text us. Well, he'd have a job with me because I haven't got a mobile phone, but never mind. Or a computer. Really up to date technologically, I am. Yes. There's a little booklet that says, you know, something about going green for Lent. And it says, have a day when you don't use your computer, your iPod or your mobile phone, which is the easiest day of the lot for me. But seriously, we are invited to live the words of Jesus from Luke. It says here to read, learn, pray about them, and do something to make a difference. One local vicar comments, and it wasn't Charlie or Sam, one local vicar comments, "It's simple, it's risky, it can be life-changing. Are we up for it? Dare we give it a go?" And she says, "It could be the journey of a lifetime." It's radically different. But it would put us in harmony with what we had read from Deuteronomy 26, which calls us to live our lives in gratitude to God on whom we depend. And we shall discover on this journey of a lifetime, come what may, that as our gospel reading said, everyone who trusts in the Lord, no ifs or buts here, no small print or exclusion clauses that you get on your insurance policy, that everyone who trusts in the Lord will never be put to shame. For the Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on him. And if we dare to embark on this journey of discovery of a lifetime, I pray that this may be our Lent experience in 2010. Amen.